Hi everyone, welcome back. First of all, I want to say thank you to everyone that has shown support for the podcast so far. To everyone who has shared the podcast on social media and sent me sweet messages, I see you and I appreciate you very much. So for today's episode, I want to share more about my experience as a first-generation college student and graduate since, you know, I already graduated. I think this episode is pretty timely since we are in the middle of graduation season. Most universities are under a semester system and have graduations in May. And then we have our quarter system universities that have graduations in June. I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that started to see a lot of more people posting their graduation pictures and content on social media, which I love to see, especially from first generation students. This conversation is also very timely because if you have been paying attention to the media or know someone in college, many students and university campuses across the country have been mobilizing and protesting the war and continuous murder of innocent Palestinians by the Israeli military. University students and allies are demanding a permanent ceasefire and for their universities to divest from companies doing business with Israel. Universities have historically been a space for political activism and change, and this is no different. As I'll share here later, a big part of why we have massive student debt in this country and why there's been an increase in anti-college slander lately is because of students standing up against the status quo. I kind of started sharing a little bit about my story as a first-generation student in the first episode of the podcast, but in case you haven't listened yet, here's a little recap. So I graduated from UC Berkeley in 2018 with my bachelor's degree in political science and Latin American studies. A few years later, I went back to school and attended USC, aka the University of Southern California, which I graduated from in 2022 with my master's degree in specialized journalism. My experiences in undergrad versus graduate school were very different. Today, I'll mainly focus on my experience at Berkeley because I think that this is the one that was way more impactful for me. I went to Berkeley straight out of high school. I was younger, more impressionable, had moved away from home. So I think what I went through there really molded me to who I am today. Whereas in grad school at USC, I kind of knew what I was getting into. I was older. I knew how to navigate higher education better. My graduate program was only 1 year instead of four. And I was living at home with my family. So my experiences were very different. Ever since I was young, going to college was always a goal of mine. I think like many people, I was taught that college was a way to get a good job, make good money, and of upward mobility. And to add to that, coming from an immigrant household, you're kind of guilted into taking any opportunity you can get. Parents kind of grilled into us that college is the way to go, and we were constantly being reminded not to let our parents' sacrifices go in vain. But honestly, I've always enjoyed school and learning new things. I tended to get good grades. I was in high honors. I was student of the month a few times, you know, typical nerdy stuff. So college always seemed like the right path for me. As the oldest sibling, I didn't have anyone who went to college to teach me the do's and don'ts. And there just wasn't anyone around me whose experience I could draw from. So when I went to college, it was a huge culture shock for me, and there was a lot of trial and error. I think there's three different categories of challenges I'd say first-generation students go through. The first is applying to college. Second, and I think the most difficult, is while they're in college. And then maybe post-grad, transitioning out of college and finding a job is another one, which unfortunately not many make it that far. Getting into college is one thing and graduating is another. I had many people I went to school with drop out for, you know, different personal circumstances. I think my high school did a decent job at helping us apply to college, at least in my opinion. Other people might have a different experience and that's valid. I went to a small charter high school and there's many things I did not like about the school, but it was okay at helping us apply to college. A solid B. I remember the counselor at that time held a workshop for students and parents to attend and get step-by-step help on completing FAFSA, which is the Federal Student Aid application. And that for me was a huge help because if you've ever completed that application, you know it can be very confusing. I was privileged in the sense that my dad and my mom are a US citizen and resident respectively, so that made it easier for me to complete the form because they had a social security number. But I know that for many of my peers whose parents were undocumented, that was a huge barrier for them. So I applied to college. About 10 years ago now, which is crazy to say out loud because time flies by so fast, I ended up applying to a bunch of colleges across California. I was accepted to all the universities I applied to except for one, UCLA, which at the time was the university that I wanted to go to. Well, it was between UC Berkeley and UCLA, but if accepted, I would have probably gone to UCLA because I really wanted to stay close to home. But honestly, at the end of the day, I am grateful that UCLA rejected me because I think Berkeley was the obvious better fit for me. Berkeley is known for its political activism, which as someone who wanted to study politics and interested in social activism, that is the place to be. If you are a recent high school graduate or applying to grad school and got rejected from a college you really wanted to go to, don't get discouraged. Maybe it's the universe redirecting you to something better. When I got accepted into Berkeley, one of the conditions of my admission was that I had to go to summer school. Berkeley has this 6-week summer bridge program that is intended to help students transition into college. It's mostly geared for first-generation students, international students, and student athletes to help them get a sense of what college is going to be like and not fall behind when the school year actually starts. And well, because my high school wasn't the best, you know, we didn't have a strong curriculum, we didn't have a lot of resources, I guess the university thought or knew that I was going to struggle transitioning into college. So I had to attend summer school or they would revoke my admission. But honestly, Summer Bridge was one of my favorite experiences from college. I met most of my friends there. A lot of the students in the program came from similar backgrounds as I did. They were first gen, a lot of them were from LA actually, and many of them were Latino and other minorities. The summer program itself felt like its little own college experience. We would go to class, go to tutoring, mentoring sessions, and then on the weekends, we'd party. We had a good little balance going on. But of course, it was too good to be true. When the actual school year started, I got a rude awakening. I thought I was going to be able to go to my classes, be involved on campus, maybe work a part-time job, and still have a social life. I didn't really know what I was getting into with college. Again, I didn't have someone close to me whose experience I could learn from. All I knew is what I saw in movies, and obviously that was not realistic. I very quickly started struggling in school academically. The classes I was taking were hard. We would have to do a lot of readings before every class, and the texts were very difficult to understand. A lot of it felt like I was reading old English. I mean, some of it was old English, but a lot of the readings you do in college are like academic journals and research filled with a lot of jargon and big words. I would have to read over passages multiple times in order to get a glimpse of what the reading was even about. I think what made it even more difficult is that it seemed like the students around me weren't struggling like I was. UC Berkeley is a great school. It competes with a lot of the Ivy League schools in many ways. So you have really smart students that were all at top of their own high schools there. So there was definitely a sense of competition and gatekeeping amongst students. There were many students who would participate in class and use big words in order to like flex their intelligence. They sounded a little like this.
Oh, absolutely. And I do believe there is something to be said about this sort of, willing ignorance, right? This sort of duality between that consciousness of being aware in such manner and yet readily marginalizing.
For a long time, I felt like I didn't belong at that school. I didn't feel smart enough. I wouldn't really participate in class because I was afraid of saying something wrong. Don't get me wrong, I generally understood what was going on in class. Like, I understood individual concepts and statements, but I had trouble connecting all the dots, if that makes sense. I think something that made it difficult too was professors delegitimizing students' experiences. I was a political science major, so we talk about political things like immigration, voting, political parties, etc. And sometimes I did try to participate by sharing my own personal experiences of growing up in South Central and having family outside of the country. And many times the professors would be like, well, this isn't a history class. This is poli-sci. Or that's too personal. It needs to be based on research. And that was upsetting because to me, my family, my community, this was our truth. Just because there isn't some PhD research at that time to back it up doesn't mean it's not true. But a lot of the professors didn't like being challenged by the students. There was a video circulating social media a few weeks ago of the dean of UC Berkeley Law and his wife, who is also a professor, hosting an event for the law students at their home, when a Muslim woman student at the law school decided to use this time to speak up about the genocide happening in Palestine. The woman professor then proceeded to grab the student's phone and put her hands on the student in a very aggressive manner, by the way, and kicked the student out. Now, the legality of what happened is one thing. Some people say that because it was on a private property, that free speech rights are blurry. However, in my personal humble opinion, I don't think that the student was a threat in any way to the host or the people there. The actions of the law professor purely seemed like a means of silencing the student. And I don't think that the professor should have ever put her hands on the student. In college, we're taught to speak up when injustices happen, and that is exactly what the student was doing. But this is the type of stuff that happened at Berkeley. The professors would claim to be woke and for the cause, but the moment that you challenge them, they would get triggered and shut you down. This is also a reason why I didn't really go to office hours and talk to professors, because it was intimidating. I didn't want them to ask a question about the reading and me not knowing how to answer and then be accused of not doing the homework. So for the first 2 years of college, I felt like I was playing catch up with the rest of my peers. I was laying low, trying my best to just pass my classes. But sometime between my second and third year, I literally felt this switch happen in my brain. I had an easier time with the readings, following along in class, and I was able to articulate my thoughts a lot better. I think it was a combination of things. Of course, all my hard work was paying off, all the reading and writing I was doing, but also I had become a lot more confident in advocating for myself. Now, I hope that some conservative-leaning people listening don't try to use my experience as an example of why race-based admission or affirmative action shouldn't be a thing. Y'all better not be like, see, this is why students from marginalized backgrounds shouldn't be going to college. They don't belong there. No. That is very loud and very wrong what I'm trying to say. I think this is more of an example of why we should be funding and providing more resources for K-12 education and evening the playing field for all students, as well as supporting students through college, not just getting them there. Although it took me a while to realize it, I obviously belonged in that college. I'm obviously a very intelligent person, and I think my real-world experiences made me a more well-rounded student. I just didn't have the support that I needed at the time. So that is a little bit about what I went through inside of the classroom. Now, outside of class, I experienced another set of challenges. I really wanted to get involved on campus. So I applied to literally dozens of student clubs. I applied to clubs like Model United Nations, ASUC, which is the student body government of Berkeley. I applied to pre-law associations, and I even rushed the sororities. Fraternities and sororities deserve their own episode in the future because that comes with its own baggage. But anyway, I applied everywhere I could, but I was constantly rejected from these clubs. A lot of the student organizations on campus make it unnecessarily difficult to get into. It's not like you just sign up and you're in. They make you jump through hoops. It's like applying for a job in a way. For many of them, you have to submit a resume, a personal statement, go through like 2 rounds of interviews, and unless you know someone who's already in, your chances of getting in are very slim. There's an article by the Daily Californian, which is the Berkeley student-run newspaper, that talks about how hard it is to get into clubs at the university, especially for transfer students. Here's a little excerpt from that article. Nasra Kaur, campus junior transfer student, expected clubs to reflect UC Berkeley's commitment to supporting marginalized students, but was disappointed with the lack of amenities following her rejection from Cal mock trial. When I first started looking around, I found that a lot of student organizations were very not transfer exclusive per se, but did not offer any additional support for junior transfers to come and join, Shakur said. That was very off-putting. Shakur added, by requesting GPA scores and prioritizing longevity and club loyalty, clubs discounted the experience junior transfer students had accrued prior to arriving on campus. Despite some clubs hosting info sessions, particularly for underrepresented minorities, Shakur still noted a disparity in club admissions for students who weren't freshmen or sophomores. She added that campus transfer students included a higher number of people of color, low-income students, student parents, and reentry students. The article goes on to say that these clubs have a very difficult application process and that there's even been complaints about nepotism in the selection process. And I share this article because it's not just my biased opinion that it's hard to get into these clubs. It was a very well-known thing amongst students, especially students of color. And this is why I don't believe in the idea of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. If you haven't heard that phrase before, a lot of right-leaning, politically conservative people use it, basically implying that people have to find success on their own without help from anyone, without handouts, especially from the government. But I think that idea is bullshit because obviously shit is rigged. Some people happen to be born into wealthier families and live in affluent neighborhoods with well-resourced schools. That doesn't mean that they're smarter, but clearly they have had a head start in life. And then there's some of us who are trying our hardest and it's still not good enough for the gatekeepers. Getting rejection after rejection definitely hurt my self-esteem at the time. I was young, I just wanted to get involved, fit in, but eventually I just kind of gave up on the mainstream clubs on campus and focused on creating my own community with people that cared about the same issues that I did. This is in part what pushed me to become a community organizer and advocate for the needs of Black, Latino, Latina, and other students of color on campus. And of course, to top all of these challenges that I was going through while being in college, what made it 100 times more difficult was being away from home. Berkeley is 6 hours away from Los Angeles by car, and at that time, I didn't have a car, and flying home was expensive. Most of the time, I would travel home by bus in either the Greyhound or Megabus, which if you've ever traveled by those buses, you know travel time is like 8 to 11 hours and the seats are super uncomfortable. I will say, a vivid memory I have from traveling on these buses is the fuzzy feeling I'd get every time I would see the downtown LA skyline as we were driving in. I usually traveled by night, so it'd be dawn when the buses would get to LA, and it kind of felt like an out-of-body experience. It felt like I was in a movie, and of course, I was the main character. I was happy to be home and felt like nothing had changed, but also I felt like an outsider and visitor in my own home because I technically didn't live there anymore. I've always been very close to my family, not just my immediate family, but my extended family, like my cousins, grandma, uncles, and aunts. A lot of my family lives in Baja California, so I grew up going to Mexico a lot for quinceañeras, weddings, and family reunions. And for 4 years, I missed out on a lot of that. There was a time in college that I would hate when the weekend would come around. While most people look forward to the weekends, I dreaded the weekends because I knew that my family and friends would be spending time together without me. They'd be enjoying themselves, and I'd be stuck in my dorm or at the library reading or writing an essay. I was jealous, I was mad, I was sad. It was hard. There were a lot of times when family parties were happening and I was just living vicariously through what my family members were posting on social media. So because of everything that I was going through, being away from home, all the stresses from school, and then, you know, just drama that tends to come with relationships you acquire, I was going through it. I was really struggling with my mental health. I would have like panic attacks. I would have depressive episodes. I wasn't taking care of my body well, so I was always getting sick. So while I was in college, I was in therapy kind of on and off, not very consistently. Mostly when I would have just like episodes, I would go in and like talk to someone. And it definitely helped. I know that in many communities of color, therapy is still a taboo. I think in recent years, it's become something that's talked out loud more and less of a taboo, but it's still not as normalized maybe as it should be. But if you are going through it, try to seek therapy, try to talk to someone about it. And if you get a therapist that maybe isn't right for you or isn't really helping you through it, try to find another one because I definitely went through that too. I had to go to like 2-3 different therapists to finally find someone that was helpful and was really like actually listening to me and helping me through it. But you know what? Despite this, I do not regret going to college and moving away from home. No sé si me gusta la mala vida, no sé qué será, but I like the person that I became through all of the hardships. Of course, there's things I would have done differently or I wish never happened, but overall, I'm grateful for the positive experiences I did have and all of the knowledge that now flows through my brain because of college. And of course, I'm grateful for some of the amazing people that I met while I was there. Going to college taught me many valuable skills. I feel confident in advocating for myself and asking difficult questions to powerful people. I'm very good at conducting research or finding the people that might have the answers to my questions. I know how to navigate these like economic and political systems. All those presentations I did for my classes paid off. I feel comfortable public speaking, which I know some people dread. Honestly, one of the best moments in my life thus far has been my Berkeley graduation ceremony. I didn't do the general commencement ceremony because I felt like that one was just gonna be too long. The main ceremony for me was the Latinx graduation ceremony, which focused on highlighting Latino-Latina students and their families. Many of us were first-generation students. The ceremony was both in English and Spanish because, of course, they understood that, you know, a lot of our parents are monolingual Spanish speakers. I remember being hungover and almost missing it, but I made it just in time. One of the beautiful things about this ceremony is that they allow two people to walk with the graduates. So for me, of course, I chose to walk with my mom and my dad. I would not be where I am without my parents. They've always been the most supportive and giving. That day, it wasn't just me graduating, but it was them too. I was thankful to be able to share that moment with them. Now, I see a lot of people talking down on higher education lately. I've seen politicians and people on social media say that college isn't worth it.
More and more Americans are asking themselves, is a college degree still worth it? With inflation hitting American pockets hard and tuition costs rising, folks are rethinking higher education. In fact, some two-thirds of Americans, according to a new survey, believe that well-paying, stable jobs can be obtained with only a high school diploma or GED. And it isn't just hype or big talk. Many are actually putting college off, dropping out, or not going at all.
Now, I understand that college is a privilege and some people may not want to wait 4+ years to start working full time and making money. Going to school isn't for everyone. Not everyone learns by being stuck in a classroom for hours in a day and listening to someone lecture. Yes, there's people that are successful without going to college. And just because people go to college doesn't mean that they are smarter than people who didn't. There's definitely hella ignorant people that graduate college. However, with all of this said, I really do urge people to at least consider higher education. It doesn't have to be a traditional university. Everyone has their own path. But I think in the long run, having some sort of degree does give you more flexibility in changing careers down the line or open you up to different job opportunities. People that have a bachelor's degree typically make 68% more than people with high school diplomas, and earnings tend to be higher if you have a master's, professional, and doctoral degrees, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And I think college is not just about what you learn in the classroom, it's about the experiences of being on your own and figuring out who you are in life. You also get to meet people of different backgrounds, learn new cultures, new ideas. Honestly, I think some of the bashing on higher education comes from the fact that there's a huge shift in the demographics of students who attend college. For a long time, college was exclusive to white males, but in recent years, more Black Latino students have gone to college more than ever. In the 1980s, white folks made up 84% of the student population, Black folks made up 9%, Latino-Latinas 4%, and Asians only 2%, according to the Pew Research Center. In 2020, white folks made up 54% of the student population, Black folks made up 13%, Latino-Latinas 20%, and Asians 8%. Of course, there's still more work to be done in bringing diverse backgrounds to college, but we've definitely made waves in the last few decades. For years, I've heard people critique liberal arts degrees. I definitely heard this when I was in college. People would tell me, well, what are you going to do with a poli-sci degree? But I've heard a lot of this rhetoric a lot more lately. I saw a TikTok a few days ago about a girl saying something along the lines of, y'all can't find a good paying job because y'all majored in a hobby. And when I saw this, I chuckled a little bit, but also I think that that's BS. First of all, I think all majors have worth. Like, yeah, some majors are going to have a higher probability of getting you a higher paying job, but in this world, we need people with diverse jobs. We can't all be marketing majors or doctors or computer scientists. We need people with a background in psychology, gender studies, communications. I don't understand why people talk down on humanities and arts degrees so much when at the end of the day, we all watch movies and listen to music, and the arts are obviously very important. Honestly, I think it's more important to major in something that you're actually going to enjoy learning about for 4+ years, because you're going to be dedicating a lot of your time to it. Even then, majoring in things like tech doesn't even guarantee you a sustainable job anymore, unfortunately. In the past year, there's been many layoffs in the tech industry. I think people direct their criticism to the wrong thing. I think the fact that getting a job out of college is hard and the jobs that are out there are not paying enough is more of a reflection on the economy and the job market than individual students' choices and education itself. Another criticism I hear about college is how expensive it is, and I think this is a valid concern. Students shouldn't have to get into massive debt in order to go to college. I don't know about y'all, but I personally think that all student debt should be canceled. I think colleges should receive more state and federal funding so that they don't have to charge students an arm and a leg for tuition. There's no way this government is sending billions of dollars to another country to commit war crimes when we have people here at home with crippling student debt. And then we have the bootlickers who are like, well, you signed up for those loans, you have to pay. Again, I think that the criticism should be directed to why college is expensive and not the students. The blame needs to be put on the system, not the people. And I think in order to understand why college is so expensive, we have to go back to the Ronald Reagan administration. Some of you may be familiar with Reagan. He was governor of California from 1967 to 1975. He later became president of the United States in the 1980s. Some of our immigrant parents may know of Reagan as the president who gave them amnesty and immigration reform. I know that's how my dad became a U.S. citizen. But Reagan is also a big reason why students get into massive student debt pursuing higher education. Reagan was governor of California during the almost 2-decades-long Vietnam War, which many college students were actively protesting. When he ran for governor the first time, he often bashed student protesters during his campaign. Interestingly enough, Reagan had particular hate for my alma mater, UC Berkeley, which at the time had become a national center of organizing against the war.
The people ask, what can be done about Berkeley? This is what I propose to do about Berkeley.
When he got into office, Reagan shut down all 28 UC and Cal State campuses in the midst of student protest. He eventually pushed to cut state funding for California public colleges, which then was replicated nationwide. One of his advisors, Roger Freeman, tried justifying the governor's actions by saying, quote, "We are in danger of producing an educated proletariat. That's dynamite. We have to be selective on who we allow to go through higher education." So Freeman said the quiet part out loud. Politicians and people in power love people who are not informed and are indifferent. It lets them get away with more. They are afraid of people who are educated and informed that keep them accountable for their actions. So for them, making college more expensive was a way of making higher education inaccessible for working class people. And unfortunately, we're seeing history repeat itself on college campuses today with the pro-Palestine protests. Some student protesters have been successful at getting their universities to commit to divesting from weapon manufacturers and other businesses profiting off of the war in Gaza, and having their universities be more transparent on how they invest their endowment funds. However, at many other universities like UCLA and USC, universities have rejected the protesters' demands, and students have been met with violence. The universities have violently removed encampments and arrested hundreds of students. Students have also faced violence from pro-Israel counter-protesters. Most of the encampments themselves have been peaceful despite the mainstream media reporting otherwise. Some politicians recently have threatened cutting aid to schools and students that are protesting. Some politicians have even called for deporting some of the students. It's frustrating seeing people in power not do what their constituents put them in power to do. 67% of American voters support the U.S. calling for a permanent ceasefire and de-escalation of violence in Gaza, according to a Data for Progress report. We shouldn't have to wait 10 to 20 years for politicians to come out and say, oops, we fucked up. With that said, I hope sharing my experience as a first-gen student helped folks realize that they are not alone in the struggle. If you are first-gen, next time you're walking on campus, remember that you've come a long way. There's people in power that are scared of you being there, becoming informed, and keeping them on their toes. And congrats to all of the students graduating this year. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and see you in the next episode.